they were smoking it. And then they said it was grass. That's what they call it, grass. And I knew that was a drug, because going to New York every year, I had heard about, you know, these drugs. And we all left. We left. We left them there with the smoking their grass. Smelled terrible. So that was JC's. That was a private club. And there was another one that, on McDowell Street. Stayed open all night long. And after dance, you know, we have dances at the Armory. Mm-hmm. And after the dance, there'd be formal dances and, you know, long gowns and all that. Then the thing to do was go by, I think his name was Ingram. The thing to do was go by there and have breakfast. Mm. And he was ready for us, you know, big breakfast before you went home. So it was a lot of entertainment like that. And then we had theater. Over here we had the Grand Theater, and then we had Lincoln Theater over there in Brooklyn. That was on 2nd Street, Lincoln Theater.
Which is better, the Lincoln, the Grand, or the Savoy?
Oh, the Grand Theater. Mr., what is he called? Nugent. I don't know how you spell his name. I mean, I'm not even sure of that pronunciation, but all I remember is they called Mr. Nugent. And he would, that it was clean. I remember going to the Lincoln Theater one time, and when I came out, my legs were just itching in the back. There were chinches in the place. Mm. They had been biting me. And just full of bugs, just full of bumps, you know, there's chinches over there. I didn't want to go back. And I don't remember even going. I heard about the Savoy, but I don't remember going there. But the Grand Theaters were where I went most of the time. I remember it was a movie. And I don't know whether it was Gone with the Wind or what, but it was a very talked about movie. And people were lined up all the way out the theater down the thing. And there were some men in there that had been working, and they were smelling good and they were dirty. And I remember him coming out to the line, and he was a small man. And he came out and he asked them, would they please go home and shower and change their clothes and come back? He said, the ladies are in the line, they dressed up, and they don't want to sit next to you. And everybody started clapping. And he did. He asked them out of the line. He wouldn't let them in his theater. And we appreciated that.
Was he a white man or a black man?
He was white.
Really?
Uh-huh. And he was small. But he was not afraid. You know, he came out. That was his theater. And he was protecting us. And he asked them out of that line. I've never forgotten it. Mm-hmm. They got out. They did not contest or get angry or anything. They said, you're right, you're right. So they got out. Mm-hmm.
Was that unusual to have a white man own a business like that
in the black community? You know, at the time, as far as having a theater, we never questioned that, because we didn't know any black people that were wealthy enough to own a theater. So it wasn't, and we had white merchants in there. You know, the store up above me on the corner, convenience store, was owned by Mr. Knox. He was white. So it wasn't anything.
It wasn't unheard of.
Mm-mm, it wasn't unheard of. So, I remember my daddy had a bill up there wherein he didn't allow us to borrow from the neighbors, and we could go up there. If we needed something, we'd go up there and put it on his bill. And I remember my older sisters and brothers would go up there and they'd have a party, card party. And the only thing they had to buy was slow gin. And I remember seeing a TD and I, she was the one that told everything to my parents. The one you interviewed, she would tell everything. I didn't tell anything. She'd tell everything. And we saw the menu, and they had on there slow gin. She said, what's slow gin? But anyway, they would go up there, and they would get hot dogs, buns. They'd make, my sister would get cabbage, make slaw, whatever. And they would have their friends over, and they'd play cards, and they'd drink their gin, And then by the time my parents would get home from work, everything was clean. Mm. They didn't even know it. But Tini would tell her.
She's a good person.
You want
person.
Some more coffee?
No, I'm okay. I'll let you get some more. As we talked about, urban renewal isn't... sometimes the what happened wasn't exactly the ideals that they were going for. Mm-hmm. What was the feelings in the community when it started to happen?
I think when a lot of the older people, especially, like my father that had raised his 6 children there, I think it was devastating. He never recovered. And for some, it was a good idea because we had a lot of homes that were, shouldn't have been inhabited by human beings, really. But we had a lot of homes that were good homes and that people had kept up because they had pride in their neighborhood, you know. Like, the streets were not paved, so you had a white frame house, it wasn't going to be long before it got dusty. And there wasn't a lot of automobiles then, so a lot of people didn't have an automobile. I'm trying to remember how many people on my street owned a car. And I see Miss Mamie, the lady that eventually started renting rooms. She had a Cadillac, blue. And the man next door to me, Mr. Foster, who's a carpenter, he was an independent contractor, his car wasn't running, it's parked in the yard. As far as I can remember, there was one car on my street. So it wasn't that, but it was just, if the wind would blow, your house would get dirty, you know. And my sister and I used to have to wash the side of the house off. We see somebody coming, we set on the bucket so they wouldn't see us. We were ashamed. But I think it was mixed reactions in the community about that. A lot of people, they had these friends that they'd had for years and years and years, and they wanted to be near their friends, and it just wasn't possible to do that. So it was nobody in our community except one lady that moved near my parents, Miss Jessie Bingham, and Jessie Bingham Robinson. And she was the first school I went to, like, you know, in the community. She had like a little, I guess it was a kindergarten. She taught us the proper way to drink tea, to eat, and little etiquette things like that. And she moved near my mama, but nobody else in that community moved in that area. She had 2 homes over there. One, her mother. Her mother was, either her mother was a slave or her mother's parents were slaves. There was another family called the Beatties, and this old lady was a slave.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I used to go up and talk to her. I always liked talking to old people. I would visit the old ladies in the community, all of them, and a married one. Some of them, they were young women, but they were married. They had children and everything. But I just always liked talking to them, you know, going around the older ladies. And I used to go up to Miss Beatties to talk to her because she had been a slave.
Mm-hmm. What was the most interesting story Miss Beatties told you?
The horror of being owned by somebody and the treatment and the humiliation that you suffered. Those were the things she talked about, and being separated from her family. They would separate families, and she didn't even know where they were. She didn't know what had happened to them or anything.
Was she here originally from Charlotte, or did she move from there?
I don't know where she came from. I don't know what slave, what plantation she was on, but that whole family, I don't know, they were really, really black, just like the whole family. So it wasn't, they weren't far from Africa, you know. her relatives, the Beatties. We were raised up with them. They were quiet people.
What has the African American community lost since urban renewal?
Since urban renewal? You know, I don't know if they lost anything intrinsic. At that time, they had lost the connections they had over the years, the friendships they had formed, the relationships they had formed in the community at that time. But as you will look at it today, they formed other relationships and ties. But back then, they had lost a sense of community because I was told that during the Depression, my father went to all his friends. He walked to all his friends and told them how to get a second mortgage to keep from losing their home. Because black people were not educated to that. They weren't aware that they could get a second mortgage. And they were taking their homes during the Depression. And see, I was born in 1929, and I was just a baby during that time, but I was told that that's what he did in the community. And that he got out and he didn't drive, didn't have a car. He just walked and told people how they could get a second mortgage to save their homes. That kind of stuff, you know. Then when he moved, he was old. So my daddy was in his 70s. And to me back then, that was really old, but I'm 70. I'm 75. And but my daddy died, he was 76. So it was he was in his 70s, but to me that was, and I guess if I had to uproot right now and move to a new environment, it would upset me too. Because my neighbor next door is, he's very, you know, good neighbor. He looks out for me and he cuts my grass and I pay him. But, you know, I move somewhere else, I may not know anybody. They may not want to know me, you know. So I can imagine how he felt when he had to uproot from where he had raised 6 children. And he had improved on that house so much. He just, you know, that was his home. So back then, I guess they lost that sense of security too, that somebody could come through and make you tear down your house, and they're gonna take your house and you go find somewhere else to live. You know, that had to be devastating. Now my mother always thought this end of town was better than Greenville. I think she kind of liked moving. And she always wanted a brick house. We had a frame house. I think she handled it well because my mom was a little materialistic. You know, my daddy was more sentimental. Yeah. And it hurt him, you know. So he didn't like confusion either. If the reason he came here and stayed with me was because my daddy did not like the house torn up. You know, like if we had to paint, we have to paint one room a day. Don't tear up his whole house painting and leave it. When he come in, he want everything back in place. He could not deal with confusion. So when they were moving into the house over there, I brought him over here with me. And he stayed with me until they got that house together because he just didn't like that, you know. He didn't want that confusion. Please eat that cake because I'm diabetic. I had I bought it because I had a pinochle club meeting here. Yeah, so it was devastating to them, and to people didn't know where they were going. Some people that didn't own homes, they didn't know where they were going.
About how much time did they have to find another place to live?
I'm trying to remember. They had, I remember, I don't know whether it was Dr. Waddell, but they were twin brothers, Waddells. I know one was Dr. Waddell. His brother might have been a doctor too. But they had people that were helping them to relocate. And I remember he was the one assigned to my parents. And we looked a long time before we decided on a place. And one reason they decided on that one too was the location, because I timed it. If there's a train coming, I would be delayed getting to my parents. But if there was no train, I could get over there in about 4 minutes to their house. That was one decision. Plus, my mama liked the little brick house. And then they were not going to have, because I made it very clear to them, my parents could not have a house payment. Because some people moved and their house didn't cover where they wanted to go. And they had a house payment, but I said, my parents cannot have a house payment, you know. And they were both, I think they're both in their 70s by the time, yeah, when they moved over there. So that was what happened.
Well, what was your fondest memory of Brooklyn?
Well, actually, see, I wasn't even allowed to go over there too often. So when I went, I was either sneaking, or my parents didn't even know that I was going to enroll in that Y, in that class. But I always worked. I worked since I was 10 years old. And I always tried to take care of myself as much as I could. And I found out early, if I put something in layaway, my daddy and my mom would always get it out. So I just lay away. But my fondest memory of Brooklyn, I don't have any really bad memories, because nothing never happened bad to me when I would go over there. But you really should be interviewing my friend Carol Lee. She was raised up over there. But I think her community might have been known as First Ward or something. But it was, I guess Second Street might have been likened to, what's the street in New Orleans?
Bourbon Street.
It was lively, like on Saturday mm-hmm. night, it was very lively. People were walking and they were dressed up and they were just in a party mood, and it was a lot of entertainment over there. That would be my fondest, you know, going to Margaret's Grill and having fun, and other clubs over there, because they had more than we did over here, and the ones that I could go to, because my parents didn't know it, but I was there. You know, if I'd gone to the ones in Greenville, it was a few little places in Greenville, like Marie's on Johnson Street, I couldn't go there because somebody would have called and told my parents. They knew me, you know. But I guess those are the funnest ones. But we had good times in Margaret's Grill, JC's, and at Harry Goins Club. If you were anybody with somebody, you could get into Harry Goins Club. And Margaret's Grill was a good place to be. So it was nice, big, you know, and a jukebox and her good food. So I guess that's the enjoyable part of it.
Well, I appreciate your time today.
Okay.
Thank you.